That's true.
And we're opening a work session on House Bill 5008, the Department of Corrections. Mr. Nye Swender.
Yes, Chair and committee members, I placed before you three documents to summarize the work that the work group has done in preparation for this work session. One is a spreadsheet that shows, walks us from the governor's recommended budget down to the recommended budget from the subcommittee, a memo, and then the work session papers, which are detailed. I guess if I could turn your attention first to the spreadsheet. I apologize that the numbers are a little bit small on this one, but this one at least gives you on one sheet a picture of where we started, what's happened since the budget was printed, and where we are today with the subcommittee's recommendations. At the top, the budget for both the Department of Corrections and its budget bill, House Bill 5008, and the Capital Construction Bill 5029 is a total of $863,315,726. Before this budget was worked, before the subcommittee, there were two holes identified that the governor's revised, as well as the co-chair's budget intended to address, which is a $3.5 million backfill for the state criminal alien assistance program, and a $1.6 million shortfall due to some compact out caseload being left out of the governor's recommended budget. So for a total of $5.1 million. So the budget as it was delivered has had those issues to address. The co-chair's reductions related to this that were unavailable for reinvestment relate to the central government charges that have been discussed in all other budgets, PERS out-of-state travel audit charges, and DAS assessment, total $920,000. During the course of working the budget, the forecast came out, and that forecast produced an opportunity to apply some cost reductions. As you can see there, the institutions, correctional programs, and community corrections all had net reductions in terms of the impact, which helped to the tune of $3.6 million. And our COP refinance on the sale at Two Rivers allowed for another approximately $3.3 million in reductions to a total of about $6.9 million. That could be applied toward addressing the previously identified reductions at the top, the shortages, if you will. Through the work group, there were a number of items that were identified to prioritize and reduce. There's 14 items there, totaling $8.8 million that were talked about yesterday. Necessary to restore inmate activities, phased in of the IMATs. Those items were talked in detail yesterday. They're all itemized there for you as well. There's been no change to that. The governor's revised budget also added $1.7 million above the printed budget, so that put the $5.1 million they had at the top that was short plus another $1.7 million in investments on the table. Through the subcommittee's actions and commitment through the co-chairs, the amount that was identified in reductions, the $8.8 million, is reinvested, as was discussed yesterday, $8.8 million. With the forecast reductions, the recommended budget is going to be approximately $1 million, the co-chairs' reductions. Below the governor's printed budget. There is a set aside in the governor's reinvestment priorities. I think you can see there where it says legislation impact in the down there in the third box where it says $800,000. That amount has been set aside in the co-chair's budget as well as the governor's revised for that assaulting public safety officer bill. It's shown here in the totals, but it won't be shown in the budget bill because if the fiscal impact for that bill will be attached to the bill when it's worked. In summary, we have a budget that, when you take that $800,000 out of it and the $920,000 for the central government service charges changes, we're about $1.7 million below the governor's printed budget, and it's still covers the reinvestment priorities and deals with the all but this $800,000 of the $1.7 million in governor's revised additions. So,
Mr. Chair.
Is Senator Trow.
Sue, in your conference with Mr. Cook and others, is this a workable budget for you?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, yes it is. With the, I guess with the caveats that the director indicated yesterday on, we have no flexibility here if things do occur.
And some things can occur that we hope don't, but could, and you might need more flexibility. You might need to come back to the e-board for to make some case about some things.
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, yes, and some of those include the fuel costs, salary adjustment issues, health care for inmates. Those are some of the largest ones that we'll be looking to.
All right, Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Sue, just to clarify on the Deschutes rental beds reduction. I just learned that somehow the Deschutes County had received some assurance, either through the department or elsewhere, that they would have the funding basically for those rental beds. And they're just now going into budget session, I guess, in a couple of days. With this reduction, there are still other mechanisms within the department's budget that could allocate some funding still to Deschutes County for rental beds elsewhere. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Doyle, what is included still within the budget carries us through October, and that's our summer season for the work camp up there. We have a crew which is in the forest. We do use the rental beds for backup for disciplinary reasons, if you will. Another example could be when our minimum facility comes on in Madras, there won't be any segregation unit at that time, so we can contract with them for that activity as well. So those kinds of opportunities exist. But
thank you.
All right. Mr. Nicewander, you want to go through the next document?
Yes. Also placed before you was a memo dated May 17th, which summarizes what I've just shared with you verbally, but it does have the detailed adjustments by budget unit for each one of those line items to give you some additional detail. In institutions, for instance, there's a total of about 15 or 16 bullets there that reflect 11 reductions and 4 restorations. So by each unit, I've given you a little bit of detail as to how we got to the revised budget. And more importantly, the part that we haven't covered is there are 8 recommended budget notes that start on page 4 of the memo. The first 2 are as a result of the work group's efforts to deal with as much as we could now and send a message of the need for additional work to be done related to supervisory management positions review, and the second one for finalizing the staffing standards. And the first one directs the department to conduct a review of all of its executive management, supervisory, and non-supervisory positions to ensure that the current designations are correct and identify the need to change the designation to an appropriate one if there are some that are incorrect. It will require them also to verify supervision levels, classifications, and determine what, if any, of those positions could be reclassified.
Sure.
Senator Trow.
Was that one worked out with the cooperation of the department so they're comfortable with it?
Chair Miller and Senator Trow, the department has seen each of these before today, had an opportunity to review, comment, and I believe Sue can confirm to you that they can work on these.
She's nodding her head that it looks like you usually do very good work on these, Larry, but just want to make sure we
I
don't
understand.
Have...
Usually?
Usually.
I understand.
Once in a while. Is that better?
It's not getting better, is it? Once in a while, it does good work. What? Go ahead, Larry.
The second one is that for the director department to finalize the staffing standards. They testified that they had worked on them. They were not completed yet. And this is an important part of the department's ability to deal with variations that are in the system. We discovered those when we went through that data. They're still working on it. This is just a budget note to direct them to finalize the staffing standards at the medium and maximum facilities. so that that information can be considered during the development of their next budget. And also, since they're in transition, it's a time for them to also integrate the impact of the inmate management transition system, which is to say they're going to move programs from various locations. And also, a key budget driver to the staffing costs is the number of positions that are identified in institutions that are five-day or seven-day posts. The budget note directs them also to standardize, to the extent possible, the institutional activities that are driving the needs for those. And the department has reviewed that as well. The third one is at the request of Representative Doyle, and this is in response to concerns expressed in the public hearing as well as outside of it that relate to the Oregon Correctional Enterprises. And this is an effort to try and create a little bit more of a level playing field as it relates to accounting for costs related to that entity when it is, in fact, competing for profit in the marketplace. It directs the department to develop, identify the extent to which general fund resources within its approved budget are supporting that entity, and to develop a method of recovering appropriate costs for that entity's use of general fund resources, and then to just do it in a cost-effective manner so that it doesn't increase the cost of government, which the constitutional measure was designed to, if anything, decrease the cost of government. Representative Doyle has seen it, reviewed it, and he is comfortable with that, and so is the department. The next one, institutions. This is relating to issues raised by Representatives Hill and Crummell relating to concerns surrounding supervision of inmates on work crews by host agencies. And what this does is just direct some interim work to be done with host agencies to design some a training program for them, and if it, at their request, additional training related to staff protection. There is a similar budget note going to be going into the Department of Forestry, or at least there's discussion surrounding a similar budget note for Department of Forestry, who was one of the agencies that raised this issue with representatives, I believe, or at least someone working for the Department of Forestry. The department has also seen review and believes this one is workable as well. The next three budget notes were budget notes adopted and recommended by the Advancing E-Government Subcommittee related to information technology, and the department has also seen reviewed each of these and found them to be workable as well. In each case, they are the Criminal Justice Information Technology Plan budget note is similar to the one that you will see that's in State Police's budget, Judicial Department's budget, Youth Authority's budget, and that's just to make further progress in integrating information that is in that system and providing a report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. The next one at the top of the next page, telecommunication expenses. In their appearance before that subcommittee, it was discussed that there wasn't really central management of its telephone and telecommunication resources, and that there were expenditures that were going above budgeted levels, and the direction that the subcommittee believed would be helpful to the department was to expect them to plan for central management of those resources and identify expenditures and track them so that they could get a better handle on it. In addition to that, there was some direction from the subcommittee to move some money in their S&S budget to deal with some funding shortages in telecommunications, which will also occur. The last one there is for information systems is a centralized procurement and asset management. That too, there was individual units doing purchases and planning for information technology, and the direction here is that the department centralized their personal computer and related hardware software purchases in an effort to get the best price and also help it to reach the enterprise standards for systems development.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
In the work group's product here, one of the pretty darn good chunk of savings was identified in finding prices reflecting today's market, which is pretty impressive and very helpful in this budget creation. Should we have a sense that everybody else is doing this?
I think the Advancing E-Government Committee is asking that those kind of questions about how agencies are handling their information technology purchases and where they're finding that there is disjointed efforts. They are looking at that. I can't answer as to whether every budget that's been before this subcommittee or others has had an update on whether or not the prices in the budget were for information technology. I've looked at that, certainly where I've seen major amounts of purchases, and this is the largest budget for that that's before this subcommittee, especially with the opening of Coffee Creek. But I suspect that it's something that is standardly reviewed because prices do change. And the reductions you saw are a result of two things. One, reduction in prices, but the second thing was there was, in the data, since it was individually developed, there were some inconsistencies in terms of what was being estimated for cost, and so we standardized that.
Okay.
So I hope that others are doing that.
Yeah, thank you.
The last one is at the request of the co-chairs, and this is a community corrections budget note. In discussions with the co-chairs, they wanted this budget note for a couple reasons. The direction of this budget note is to provide direction to the department to identify alternative community-based sanctions which are achieving the outcomes envisioned through Senate Bill 1145. Once those alternatives and best practices are identified, they want the information shared with all counties and also the department to the extent possible, provide training and technical assistance. I think you'll recall from testimony there was considerable concern about whether or not the funding was adequate, whether the incarceration rates were reflective of what was envisioned, and whether or not the grant funding was adequate based on that, and whether changes to the formula needed to be made. And I believe there's a policy bill where that discussion has happened extensively on the other end of the hall. This budget note is to actually try to help the department and in its efforts to implement the law as it was originally envisioned, there was a significant hope that alternative community-based sanctions would play a central role in the effective use of these community corrections grant funds, and this is an effort to try and see how much farther we can go that direction and provide some incentives to do that. There are huge disparities in terms of how counties are using those. The second part is to develop some performance measures related to those best practices that are essential to increasing the successful use of alternative community-based sanctions. Once those measures are developed and some performance targets established, to incorporate those into the intergovernmental agreements that the department has with all counties. The allocation formula that's currently in place, the next bullet asks the department to review that allocation formula with counties in hopes that it can identify possible incentives they can provide to counties that are, in fact, exceeding the performance measures targets that are established related to these alternative community-based sanctions. And then lastly, to provide a report to the Emergency Board on progress made in completing these activities, as well as some information on a county-by-county review as to how various counties are approaching the use of alternative community-based sanctions.
Representative Hansen.
I like a lot of this, but I've got one problem with it, though. The benchmarks, the best practices, that's real good stuff that should be there. I think the third bullet down, review the allocation formula to identify possible incentives that can be provided. Where we miss the target a little bit is even if you put the best practices in place, there's still a real problem in terms of whether you can get to the 25-75 split. Now, maybe you can with best practices, but historically, we're closer to a 90-10 split. And after a review of best practices and, reworking the system, you still may not be at a 75-25 split. And I think we need to have some recognition that if we can't get to 75-25, there should be an adjustment to the formula. And I don't see anything in there that this is basically only says get to the 75-25 formula with by improving best practices. And if that's, and certainly I'd encourage that, but there's no room for adjusting the formula if you can't get there.
Let me ask a question. What if in that statement struck the word "to" and inserted the word "and"? Simply reviewed the allocation formula. We also sought to identify possible incentives that could be provided. If I understand what your concern is, that the payout's been more in the 90-10 as opposed to 75-25, a review of that formula might so indicate, and
that would help a great deal.
And maybe those who signed off on the two language won't notice the "and".
It's not a very big change.
One more letter.
Yeah.
Is that
okay.
Meet
okay.
your
I'm
purpose?
I'm just looking at the wrong two.
Yeah. Is that meet the approval of this committee?
Sure.
So one a nice one word substitution.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty good.
I was looking at the wrong two, Mr. Chair, so I couldn't figure
oh.
out what your
what
sentence
is he talking
was.
About
yeah.
again? All right, well, with the.
Okay. If I guess Chair Miller and committee members, what I will do is bring that to their attention. These were approved by them. If that's not a problem, that's the way it will come out of in the budget report.
Instead of bringing it to their attention, how about just sliding it past them and
okay.
see if they notice it?
Well, hopefully, even with the current, the allocation formula should always be subject to review, but this will make it real clear that that's our intention.
Yeah. We got enough votes without you.
We get Lenny to come back.
Okay, I'm going
to
okay.
Okay.
Did you want to say anything nice about this budget before you go?
I'm very impressed.
Thank you.
Very impressed.
So, right. yes, yeah, the last thing is on that page is.
Oh, Senator Brown?
Last thing on this page was the recommended expectation statement. This is consistent with what we have adopted in previous budgets related to the expectation of the department. Take the steps that we identified when we were working the Department of Justice budget to meet them halfway in doing things to contain legal costs. So it discusses the gatekeeper policy, realistic timelines, use of templates and standards, exploring class exemptions where they are producing various contracts. And this is consistent also with what we've done with other budgets. In the last section,
let me interrupt you for just a second. In light of Senator Brown's schedule here, she had a concern that she'd expressed with respect to the women's facilities and the programs, and I'd like her to put that on the record.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your willingness for me to craft the budget note, but I think how I'd like to handle this issue is that I'll be just drafting a letter to Department of Corrections expressing my concern that the programming that women offenders receive is equitable to the type of programming that the men receive and that it is gender appropriate. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Appreciate your efforts.
All right.
Okay.
Excuse me, Larry. Proceed.
Mr. Chair Miller, committee members, the last section is to talk through the recommended appropriation bill amendments. embodied in the recommendations are some adjustments that are in also House Bill 5029, which is not before this committee. It's the capital construction bill, but so they will not be addressed here. But suffice it to say that some the reductions are in here. I will take those to that subcommittee that involve fund shifting one of the capital construction projects that was $1.625 million to COP debt service, and that will free up the general fund that was in that bill. So the appropriation amendments to House Bill 5008 are as follows. The general fund on line 9, and I don't believe we have a copy of the bills before you today, but is amended from $503,736,450 to...
Sure. Before we proceed further with this, can we go back to the expectations for a minute? Just let me ask my standard question. Is the department comfortable with those expectations, and are they reasonable for you to be able to live with?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Trout, yes, and just looking at them now, we currently do several of these things, so we're fine.
Okay. Excuse me.
Thank you. No problem.
Sorry.
Glad to ask.
The amounts reflected in this section, if I could just summarize, are the amounts that we'd have to amend the appropriation bill. Line 9 would be need to be amended to be $507,186,353. Line 10 relating to community corrections would be amended to read $195,555,286. Line 3 to $76,372,237. No change in line 13. Line 14, $78,161,803. Those are all general fund adjustments. And line section 2, other funds, we would delete line 21 number and insert $21,493,956. Line 23, insert $11,578,374. And in federal funds, the reduction is from $10 million down to $6,823,316. And also to address the refinancing of COPs that occurred in this biennium that freed up the $3.3 million in debt service, the department would need an increase in its 1999-01 other funds expenditure limitation, and we would need to add a section to the appropriation bill doing that so that they could increase it by $106,287,950. And that was to retire the previous COPs, which were at a higher rate.
All right. Now, Representative Doyle, you had another
I did.
Issue.
Yes. There is has been concern expressed by primarily the county DAs who have prisons within their boundaries as far as handling prosecutions of criminal activities that are committed within inside the prison walls. And I'm currently working with various departments to explore the option of transferring those kind of prosecutions from the county DAs to the Department of Justice. And at this point, we're still working on a fiscal analysis to try to determine what that cost would be. And what essentially it does is it takes the workload off the district attorneys, which is a primary concern to them. It also would require, ultimately, that the Department of Corrections would then be paying for the prosecutions through to the DOJ, similar to the way that the Department of Justice has to, or that they charge other agencies for attorneys' work. The same kind of concept is something that we're looking at here. And what that does, and as I've looked at it, not only does it relieve the workload from the DAs, it also provides now, or would provide, an incentive to the Department of Corrections to prevent these kind of incidents from occurring, and then it also provides incentives, I think, to the department to fully utilize the administrative sanctions that they're allowed to do within the walls before they have to go outside. And just in initial discussions with the DAs, they like the concept because they're not just taking on the workload and billing out, for instance, or some alternative that was discussed was them billing Department of Corrections. The other issue is to them, they like the fact that it's going to reduce their workload. And it's not a turf issue at all from their perspective. They'd be happy to give up the work. The Department of Justice initially has been, they like the concept, obviously with the one caveat that they're going to get paid if they take on this extra work. And we're actually just having a meeting tomorrow morning with all the interested parties, including the Department of Corrections and legislative fiscal, so that we can just kind of iron it out. But in the interest of getting this budget moved out, we are going to go forward with that, is my understanding, and then look at a separate bill that would cover this issue independent of the current budget.
Chair.
Senator Trill.
Is that likely to be close to cost neutral?
Senator Trill, I guess neutrality is, it's going to depend on a couple of things. One is that, I mean, if you look at the whole spectrum, including what the DA expense is for this, and it removes it from the county budgets, ultimately, you know, I would say it's probably going to be neutral to the taxpayers, but not general fund issues.
But the DA's got compensated by the corrections department, don't they? It's a county. The county assumes the cost for the prosecution. Sure. That's what you're saying. So this is going to say then that the state Department of Corrections and the state will do it through the AG's office. Is that it? And
correct.
They'll pay for it.
Correct. Yeah. The one issue is that currently the DA assist program through the DOJ does provide support to county DAs. And as a good example, there's a murder case over on the east side of the state that is currently being prosecuted through the Department of Justice through this DA assist program. And it's not coming out of the county expense that I'm aware of. But the idea basically is to try to move it all.
Have you done a fiscal analysis of it, see what it would cost the state?
That's what we're working on right now, because it was really very difficult even for the department to bring together a summary of the number of incidents that have occurred throughout the state system that where they identified what issues had to go outside to state police for investigation, and then ultimately what went to the DAs for prosecution. And that's what we're working on right now, which is why we're not ready to incorporate it into this budget.
Did you have a comment before you?
Just to clarify, DOJ does get general fund money for DA assist. We did, when we did their budget, fund that program at the level of their estimated expenditures, and it did take some pressure off the hourly rate, as you recall. However, it would be budget neutral, possibly to taxpayers, as Representative Doyle has represented. To DOC, they aren't budgeted to pay additional hourly rate charges to DOJ for this service. You know, they've been basically having cases investigated by state police. When they find criminal activity has been involved, the state police then make the decision to refer it to the DAs, who are not directly compensated at this point for taking those cases up and prosecuting them. So it would have a budget impact to Department of Corrections.
And are we talking about several million dollars? What the impact will be?
Chair Miller, Senator Trode, unknown at this time. There are, you know, a couple hundred cases, and depending on what time issues the department might otherwise decide to do administratively, the costs, there could be some significant costs associated with prosecution if DOJ was involved.
Yeah, fine.
Okay, well, I think the prudent course is to proceed with this budget as is, and then if this goes forward, we'd have to come back and reconcile the expenditure.
Yes.
In this budget.
Chair Miller, we would there could be other vehicles possibly in reconciliation before the end of session that could provide an opportunity for that, any general fund available to be directed in that way.
All right. Are there other questions regarding the memo on House Bill 5008, Department of Corrections budget? Now, Representative Doyle, you missed out on the lavish praise yesterday that we heaped on the department, and also Mr. Harkins, who's back, and Mary Botkin, and Mr. Glashman was all part of this. It was a proud moment for this committee, and also Senator Brown participated, as you know, but we also are in debt to your efforts to help craft a budget that I think is representative of the finest work of this committee, and frankly, I'd say this legislature. So we really appreciate the extra work you did.
I appreciate the comments, but you know, as I look at this process, in fact, I even mentioned it to the people in the department, is that when we started this, I just had no optimism at all that we would make the progress we did. And it's to their credit, combined primarily the department and then the two unions that were involved in this, that I think that as we were able to go through the issues and have a very good discussion, open discussion about, the concerns on both sides, that we're able to come to these kind of resolutions. And then LFO staff, I just continually am amazed at the tricks they pull out of their hats to, bring certain things to attention and being able to come up with great alternatives that allow us to move forward. So I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Well, we thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yesterday I was silent in the lavish praise because Representative Leonard was here and I didn't want to keep it on too deep. But that has been incredible work by everybody that was involved in it. And it's easier to join in now that he's not here. But there were a lot of real serious concerns that came out of the public testimony, and I think the subcommittee addressed them and addressed them very well. And great cooperation from the department, LFO, and it just makes you feel good to be here and see it happen once in a while.
Big G's.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to echo the praise for Representative Doyle, Representative Leonard, and the staff. But I'd also like to thank the Department of Corrections for working with our staff and trying to save these funds and then reapportion them back into the budget. I know the governor might certainly have some concerns. We're meeting later this morning, the co-chairs, with the governor on this, because the thought was that the governor had milked the cow for all of the milk, and we found a little bit of cream still left in the jar. And so I want to commend the House members and the subcommittee for working on this in your work. But Ms. Acuff, having served on this side of the table as a LFO analyst for many years in the area of corrections, Sue, this is my last time around the block, so I get to thank you. Thank you for the work that you've done, and the department and the employees and the unit out there. I think we don't appreciate you enough sometimes, but thank you for it.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Trow.
Yeah, just want to echo those words and thank Sue and Larry and the subcommittee for its good work. I think one of the things we started with was a pretty austere budget to begin with, and then I think as we made these adjustments in the budget, saved some money in the budget and changed what we're doing and provided back some programs and things like a very, very good job. But I do think that we probably have taken a lot of flexibility out of the budget, and there are some problems that are coming, like salary adjustments and other kinds of things that that will make it more difficult for the agency to deal with those things because some of the flexibility is gone. And I think we need to remember that, but thank them very much.
Thank you, Representative. No,
Mr. Chair, clearly, without your leadership, this would not have been possible.
Right. There you go.
And I noticed that there was a lot of praise heaped on others, yet you had been left out. And I wanted to make sure that you were included in this, because if not for your willingness to delegate to the representatives, the work, and I think that speaks well of you and the co-chairs who worked with you. So I just wanted to note that for the record.
Mr. Chairman, I want to say that fortunately your tea time conflicted with the subcommittee's actions. we appreciate your willingness.
So I bring me back down.
I was just going to say, I want to give everybody a big hug. So,
well, let's see if we can pass this thing. So, Senator Trow, have you moved that we adopt the provisions contained within the memo dated May 17 regarding House Bill 5008, Department of Corrections, which would include the recommended budget notes as well as the expectation statement and appropriation bill amendments? Senator Crow is so moved. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, the motion has passed. And House Bill 5008 is sent to the full Ways and Means Committee.
Just carriers.
Carriers, I'd be happy to do that. And the House carrier, Representative Doyle. And
thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. And thank you, Larry. Like Senator Crow said, occasionally.
Once in a while.
All right, we'll move into a, and that also closed the work session on House Bill 5008. We'll now open up a work session on Senate Bill 958. Ms. Lamont is back.
Right again.
Actually open up a work 958. Do you want to do five?
Actually, Mr. Chair, if you wouldn't mind
first?
Just opening a work session on both, I'd like to cover them both.
Well, I'm then opening a work session also on House Bill 5012. Ms. Lamont.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if you recall, we had a work session on this item many months ago. And at issue was the process for distributing the filing fee surcharge to support the operations of the Dispute Resolution Commission. I have given you a one-page schematic, actually two-page schematic of what currently exists in terms of how the filing fee surcharge is used. And just as a reminder, currently the filing fees are collected on certain civil matters in the courts. That money is forwarded to the Dispute Resolution Commission, who then transfers by statute $422,000 of that to the Department of Administrative Services. The Department of Administrative Services then, as shown on picture two, distributes that money out to fund four cluster coordinator positions in state agencies. Based on the direction of this committee, if you turn my schematic over to page two, we had Senate Bill 958 drafted. What Senate Bill 958 does is that it eliminates the transfer of the $422,000 to the Department of Administrative Services. And then based on that discussion, and I apologize that my picture number four is virtually, at least for my eyes, impossible to read, but basically what that does is that it replaces the general fund in the Dispute Resolution Commission, enables them to hire two permanent positions to handle public policy dispute resolution, and with the remainder of the money to potentially contract with some state agencies to continue cluster coordinator services. However, it does not fund those positions. And with that sort of overview in mind, what I would like to do, Mr. Chair, is walk through my recommendation memo and then come back to specific recommendations.
All right, please proceed.
On House Bill 5012, which is the dispute resolution budget bill, the committee had approved the current service level and a policy option package of that reduced some other funds. Based on what we have done with Senate Bill 958, LFO is recommending eliminating the general fund and the one position, and then making some of those standard adjustments in the agency budget. Then on Senate Bill 958, eliminating the transfer of the filing fee surcharge to the Department of Administrative Services, increasing the other funds expenditure limitation in the commission, enabling the commission to enter into contracts where appropriate to temporarily fund some cluster coordinator positions with restrictions that it not exceed 0.5 FTE, and a salary and benefit cost of not to exceed $75,000, or to use the balance of the $422,000 for grants and special projects and state agencies. The agencies that currently have those positions can determine if they want to continue to fund them. And on page 2, there's a budget note that directs the commission to report back to the emergency board by November on how it is going to handle the public policy dispute resolution contracting in the interim. The Department of Administrative Services would then be requested, based on that report, to unschedule any excess limitation and position authority following the emergency board report. That is, it will give the commission a certain amount of time to come up with a work plan with outcomes and deliverables and report to the emergency board before further action is taken.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hannon.
Just want to get on the record that I spoke with Ms. Brody this morning on this, and I want to make sure that there is, to her comfort level, adequate time to do these things, and you're not winding up on the edge of a cliff being pushed off. So would you state for the record that your comfort level is such, because I know it's a concern that you have, and I'd rather get it on the record for you.
Chair Miller and Senator Hannon, I'd be happy to do that. If I could put it in a little bit of context,
sure,
that would be helpful to me. I think our overall concern, our biggest concern, is that the resources for the program across state government is being decreased. And I don't want to, so that is a problem here, in that the general fund money in our budget goes away. We can replace it with some of the surcharge money, but it means that position has to be cut in other parts of state government in the public policy program. So that's going to create a problem in service delivery for the program that is going to be significant and difficult to deal with. We've had a successful program. This is going to make it hard for us to, we won't be able to maintain the same level of service, much less increase.
Would you identify yourself on the record for us?
I'm sorry. Susan Brody, Director of the Dispute Resolution Commission. Now, with that kind of negative context, working with this kind of a budget note is possible for us to do, and reporting back in November, I think we can be prepared to do that. I'm worried that it forces us right away to change some things without having done the analysis. So, for example, one of the things it does is it precludes the commission from funding more than half of a position in different agencies. Right now, that could, and because the amount of money is decreased, it's going to require us to change the structure right away before we've been able to come back up in November and talk about alternatives. So those are my concerns about it.
I just want to get it on the record that Ms. Brody is certainly trying to work within the time frame and the mechanics that are being proposed here. But I want to make sure that she also has on the record her concerns, so that if this does not work out, Mr. Chairman, having been around here for a couple weeks as a legislator, I'd like to make sure that the agency has the ability to come back to Department of Administrative Services and say, you know, you remember back in the session you said this was going to occur on this date? Well, this hasn't happened, and we're running into difficulty because I don't want to wind up 2 years from now back here and say we cut off our nose to spite our face. So I want to get that on the record, and I want to make sure that she has adequate time to state that.
So in the event we have an I told you so, it's been recorded.
Because I won't be back here to tell you I told you.
Well, you should be here in November.
Oh, okay.
Robin?
I was just going to tell the committee that Representative Johnson would like to speak briefly to the issue of dispute resolution.
She wants the senator in Scappoose? Oh. Representative Johnson, would you like to come forward? We're always happy to have you here.
I would be the soul of brevity, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, thank you for letting me speak to you. I'm trained as a lawyer, although mercifully for the profession, I never practiced. But I am a great supporter of dispute resolution. I have used dispute resolution in some very complicated, in fact, Ms. Brody's commission, in a very complicated dispute resolution process that we tried to work in Columbia County. Already this session, I have referred the warring chiropractors to Ms. Brody, and I know that she and her staff are in the process of helping them. I'm very supportive of dispute resolution as a way of avoiding litigation, and I simply wanted to come before the committee while Ms. Brody was here and offer my support and hope that you will allow the very successful program run by Ms. Brody and her commission to move forward and provide these services statewide.
We thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, and with your permission, I'm going to withdraw and go back to my committee.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
To continue on, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, before we leave, since we have the November reporting, is it my understanding that we all understand that if it's not possible to report in November, that they might report sometime later than that when it does make sense?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my intent in establishing the November deadline was for their benefit, not for their disadvantage, because they would be needing to determine how they are going to run the program, how they are going to fund the pieces of the program, and so it was my hope that they would come as soon as possible for them to have a program in place for the biennium. We could delete that date and say something like as soon as possible if that would make members more comfortable, but it would be my hope that it would still be no later than November, because otherwise you're getting into the next biennium.
Would it make sense to delete that November, or is it just an understanding that it's not absolutely definite, sufficient?
Mr. Chair, members, why don't we put as soon as
well,
practical?
My preference would be to fix a date so that we have some reasonable expectation. As soon as possible is, I have no idea what that means. And if it's, again, when we get close to November, I think we've had discussed on the record that could be problematic, and hopefully we'll accept that if it's not all put together by that time. I think that's what this is about.
Chair Miller, members of the committee, I don't object to the November date. What I'm concerned about is that we have restricted maybe some of the options that the steering committee for the program can look at and examine in coming back in November because of the structure that's been put in place, and because of the decrease in funding that's occurred as part of this action. So I just want to go on record to say that. No, we can report back by November.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what is restricted here, and it's restricted two ways, is the ability and the authority to fund cluster coordinator positions in state agencies. It would be restricted, first of all, because, as Ms. Brody pointed out, the general fund support would be eliminated, and it would also be restricted based on the LFO recommendations that funding not exceed 0.5 FTE during the biennium. The reason for that, based on the discussions that we have had in this committee, is that there was concern about the distributed supervision of the cluster coordinators, and a desire that the Dispute Resolution Commission establish greater responsibility for how public policy dispute resolution services are performed within the state. I would point out that this does give the commission an additional permanent position, which could be used with the state agencies to continue the training, the support, the activities that these cluster coordinator positions are currently performing. But Ms. Brody is correct. It is restricted and reduced.
Okay.
Which leads me to my next bullet. The recommendation is to establish two permanent principal contributor one positions in the Dispute Resolution Commission. I included an estimated cost, but they would have flexibility if, in fact, their desire was to bring one of the existing positions in. Then the recommendation is to direct the commission to develop a long-term plan for how public policy dispute resolution services are conducted, and there is a budget note, and I will read it to you. The Dispute Resolution Commission is directed to develop a plan for implementing a permanent structure for delivering public policy dispute resolution services and to report to the Emergency Board on the plan prior to the 2001-03 biennium. The report will include recommendations that will ensure effective management of the programs and services funded with a filing fee surcharge, including grants to state agencies, interagency coordination, supervision of staff, performance measures and outcomes, and reporting. The commission should identify and propose any statutory changes needed to implement the plan. And then the final issue is one that was...
Chair, is that something the agency is comfortable with, this budget note?
Chair Miller and Senator Trow, thank you for asking the question. I believe that the budget note should be reworded slightly so that it refers to the steering committee as well as the dispute resolution commission, because under state statute, DAS, ODRC, and DOJ are jointly responsible currently for the program, and the steering committee was formed by the governor to implement that statutory direction. So I believe it would be better if the budget note could read the steering committee, including the dispute resolution, DAS, and DOJ, and the governor's office is directed to develop a plan.
Mr. Chair, my recommendation would be slightly different. I do agree the steering committee ought to be included, but I would suggest that it be the dispute resolution commission, which is an entity, be responsible, and that the budget note read the Dispute Resolution Commission and the Steering Committee are directed.
It seems to be, okay. Doesn't it?
That's fine.
The final issue is one we discussed in the subcommittee. This issue has to do with whether or not local dispute resolution commissions should be responsible for collecting a fee to support the services that it provides to local recipients of the service. There was some discussion about amending Senate Bill 958. I think we are probably out of time this session to probably do the level of review that's necessary. Therefore, I'm recommending the following budget note. The Dispute Resolution Commission is directed to work with a joint interim judiciary committee to develop a statutory framework for ensuring that local recipients of dispute resolution services make an appropriate contribution to the cost of the program. The commission and judiciary committee should consider how the fee would be used, including whether the fee should be transferred to the Dispute Resolution Commission or retained at the local level. Is that a typo?
Mm-hmm.
If retained at the local level, whether the state subsidy should be reduced proportionally, whether there should be sliding fee scales based on income, and whether there should be sliding fee scales based on the amount or nature of the dispute. The Joint Interim Judiciary Committee should recommend appropriate statutory changes to the 2003 legislature. the Dispute Resolution Commission should report to the Emergency Board not later than November 2002 on the statutory framework and the revenue impact adopted by the Joint Interim Judiciary Committee or on the progress made during the biennium on the development of the framework.
Big Cheese Secretary, are you looking for somebody?
No, I was looking for Senator Hannon. I see him hiding back there. So
he's here for another
three, 4 minutes.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Trow.
Let me ask Susan if she's comfortable with this budget.
Chair Miller and Senator Trow, I'm not entirely comfortable with this. I do think that it's a better solution than directing that fees be added at this point, because this allows an analysis to take place. The reasons I'm not entirely comfortable are severalfold. One is that, as we discussed the last time our budget was before the committee, we talked about some language that would recognize that there may be potential for fees, but until we do the analysis, it's not crystal clear that fees would be the right solution in all cases. So it would be better from my perspective if this created a little bit more openness in that regard in the language here. The second concern is that, and I know I said this before, but I'll say it again, that for many small nonprofits that are delivering these services, the imposition of fees, although could be desirable on the one hand, may be so administratively complex for a very small organization that it hurts the amount of service that can be provided. And so we're very concerned about that. We want to be able to thoroughly examine that in any analysis we do. We have no problem at all working with the Interim Judiciary Committee, would welcome that opportunity. But I just, for the record, want to state that my hope is that we haven't locked in here to the idea that fees have to be charged by all community dispute resolution programs, regardless of size, clientele served, and so forth.
I was just going to ask if that's the understanding of folks.
Well, Representative Doyle was among those initially interested, so he may have a comment.
Thank you, Chair. The way that I look at this is that it does provide a good mechanism to give a full analysis even to those issues that were just discussed by the director. I guess the way that I look at this whole process is that, and it probably is maybe a little bit more looking towards the 2003 session and the fact that, you know, most likely at least, the finances are going to be even tighter than what we're dealing with right now, and that it is probably the most appropriate to look at every area, including this one, that if there is an opportunity to reduce the state expenses, to have people a little bit more accountable for the requests they make of a state service that includes, you know, having some kind of fee, and I think the way the budget note is set up, it provides for that type of analysis, and I guess I'm not as concerned as others that, you know, we are, you know, dictating that a fee will be charged. I anticipate that the way the budget note is set up is that analysis will be made as well on, you know, whether some of those people, in especially the low income people, you know, who can't afford, you know, even a $5 charge, that we're going to have to, we would be able to address that. And I think on the, I guess as to the administrative cost, again, that is going to be analyzed. You know, is the smaller agencies, are they going to be spending more money administering, you know, the collection of fees than, you know, what they actually get from the process? So I feel that the budget note's appropriate.
Mr. Chair, members, I would point out that there is language that asks the review to include an analysis of an appropriate contribution. That is, it doesn't mandate that a fee schedule be established, but that that whole issue be looked at.
Yeah, I want to ask a quick question.
Fair, Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I have to leave.
We need you to vote now.
I know.
Oh, we actually need you to vote.
But I'm being yo-yoed back and forth here today in another committee. My question is on local dispute resolution where the person is paying a fee for a service. And the chairman and I were having a discussion on this about where local attorneys sometimes use this as a discovery means. Is that true? I mean, is that really happening by litigants using this as a discovery means, trying to get pre-set up for litigation?
Chair Miller and Senator Hannon, not to my knowledge, no. The community dispute resolution programs primarily serve people who do not have attorneys engaged at all. We're talking about youth, family, victim offender mediation sometimes, work in small claims courts where the parties are not represented by attorneys, neighbor-to-neighbor disputes where someone has built a fence that's offending, you know, in a way, or has junk cars and the other neighbor is concerned about it. And the community programs help those folks to get together and dialogue and work through their issues. And attorneys are typically not involved, and the discovery issue is not typically an issue. So that's why I was a little bit uncertain as to why, to me, the work that's being done by these community programs is not that kind of work.
My question,
that you would typically find, you know.
Okay. My question, Mr. Chairman, is there a more appropriate sliding scale that should be used rather depending upon the level of dispute? Because my concern is, and Representative Doyle, as an attorney, you may have greater knowledge of how this works, and certainly I do, but my concern is that somebody may be denied access to a system that otherwise they would be cost out because they couldn't afford legal counsel. Is there a concern on your part there, or am I maybe overstating something?
I share that concern, and I guess that's what the budget note addresses, that issue as well.
I know, but
so I mean, even on whether a sliding scale should be based on even the nature of the dispute or the amount. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, when we looked at the cost of these programs, you know, what we saw basically was I think the total cost per dispute, you know, that the state was paying was like $10 per case. I mean, it was a minimal amount, and so then, you know, that's what brought up the question that, you know, should it be set up that when somebody says I want access to this service, you know, is there a way that they could just participate in
my part question of that cost? Though is a $10 tokenism, or is it really designed to pay for a service? In other words, you and I are in a dispute. You build a 8-foot high fence, and I only want you to build a 6-foot high fence between our houses. Is that $10 tokenism, or is that $10 really there to be funded for a service?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, right now, at least it varies probably by the jurisdiction, but the cost of that service is being paid by the litigant who files a civil claim on which this surcharge is imposed. So the issue that raised was whether or not, in addition to what is paid for by the system, whether the litigants themselves ought to also pay some sort of fee for the service that they are receiving. Now, in some communities, they already are. That is, some local dispute resolution commissions have.
Well, my question is, and the reason I'm asking is, and I apologize, I wasn't here as part of the discussion of the subcommittee, but is there a potential for double whammy on that person that is in a dispute resolution, that they pay the $10 fee, they pay some other filing fee, they pay, how many times can you hit the same person up for the same level of service, I guess my question.
Well, and I guess as I looked at the issue, it seemed to me only fair that if the individuals are accessing mediation trying to avoid litigation, and they have to pay, some small fee for that, and then ultimately they don't resolve the issue and have to go to court, it doesn't make sense to me that they also have to pay the full filing fee that includes the subsidy for the dispute resolution commission. But what it seems like is most of these issues are not the kind of things that okay. go to court.
I apologize.
No, that's fine. That's a good discussion. What I suggest is this is, in my view, a pretty wimpy note because we're not going to yet assess any fee.
Okay.
We're going to take a look at the idea.
We're going to take a look at it.
I feel badly that people will think that they're able to get service for free because there isn't such a thing. Maybe they don't yet have to pay for it, but there's a whole lot of other people who are paying for services that they never get. So that's what this is all about, that maybe those who use the service ought to pay some extraordinarily small amount that would not depress the interest of any reasonable person if this service is everything that has been advertised to be. So,
my only
again,
question,
this is a...
My only question is that I have now, is this budget predicated on them collecting a fee?
No.
And operating on that?
No.
No.
I regret that it isn't. But it isn't.
Well, no, I just want to know the mechanics.
Yeah, no, not yet.
Okay.
Maybe next session.
Let me ask, as the general fund is withdrawn from the budget, what's taking its place exactly?
The general fund, Chair Miller and Senator Trow, the general fund currently supports the commission's participation in the public policy dispute resolution program. It is, by taking it away, it means there is a decrease in service across state government for the public policy dispute resolution program.
Nothing's taking its place.
Nothing is taking its place. What is taking its place in the commission's budget is that we can now draw on surcharge monies to fund a position or positions at the commission. But so we don't necessarily lose a position at the commission, but for the program as a whole, which is not just the commission but other entities as well, there's a decrease in positions that are available to provide that service. So it puts us in kind of a hard spot here because we're not losing a position as a commission, but the program that we participate in is, and that's a negative. If it's all right, I just wanted to say one other thing for the record. I just want you to understand as we go forward with this analysis on fees and community programs that the vast majority of community programs receive surcharge money from us, but it is not the majority of the funding they receive. They also have contracts with local governments, for example, that provide taxpayer dollars from the local government level to help support the services they provide. Or they may receive grants from other from foundations, or they seek funding from a variety of sources. Some of them already do charge some fees. So the dispute resolution surcharge does not fund all of the services, in fact, quite the opposite, that these community programs provide. What those state funds do right now is I think they help those entities leverage resources from other entities, and that's worth quite a bit. Thank
you. Mr. Chairman, I know we need to move.
Yeah, we do.
I apologize. I want to get
no
all
problem.
This under record.
You've
Mr.
done a
Chair,
fabulous job of that.
I need two motions.
All right.
I need a motion to move House Bill 5012 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon has so moved.
Moved.
Is there a discussion? Is there objections?
Hoffman will be an objection.
All
All right. I object to withdrawing the general fund dollars and reducing the services to state agencies that need these services. And I think that the dispute resolution process has saved us a lot of money, resolved a lot of disputes. The minimal amount of general fund we put in it is a good investment in it, and I think it's helped to make it successful.
Thank you, Senator. There are no further objections. House Bill 5012 is passed to the full Ways and Means Committee.
And I need a motion to move Senate Bill 958 to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannan so moves.
So moved.
Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Hearing and seeing none, Senate Bill 958 is passed to the full Ways and Means Committee. We'll close the work session on House Bill 5012, Senate Bill 958. Is there further
I need carriers.
Business to come before the committee?
Carriers on 5012.
Senator Hannan will do 5012.
Okay.
958, unless Senator Brown wants to do that. You
do that? I could do 958,
okay,
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you so much.
And I also need a house carrier.
And the house carriers would be Representative Doyle.
All right.
Okay.
Anybody want 958? Doyle?
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
If nothing further to come before the committee, we are adjourned. And thank you all for your fantastic.